Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein. Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with me, Dee Klein. Today's episode is brought to you by the Koi Network. Koi makes minting NFTs super easy and inexpensive. Just drag and drop your file using their NFT wallet, Finny, and Koi takes care of the rest. Minting costs as little as 1 cent, so you can create as many NFTs as you want. And when they're viewed by other people, you even earn Koi tokens that you can use to fund your next series. Check it out at koii.network. Adam Ilinich, head of community at Rarible. Welcome to NFP.
Hey, Dee. Thanks for having me.
For sure. It's great to sit down and talk with you.
Absolutely. There's so much going on right now, in the space, in the news, in the world. I'm sure we're going to have a great conversation.
For sure. Yeah, I was listening to you on Spaces the other day talking about, I think it was with Pixel Vault, and talking about your new community marketplaces. And, you know, it's interesting because I think back to 2020 was when I got into this space, and it was Rarible that was the first platform where I minted, because it was just the most open, easiest one to have that experience with. And I was working with people like, at the time, Rob Ness. And, that it was just such a cool experience. And it's interesting to see now that you have this community marketplace function that you know, kind of takes that next step of, you know, decentralization in a sense, and that openness that I liked about Rarible way back in the day. So maybe we can start by talking about that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so funny, just the way that you opened saying Rarible is one of the first places where you sort of started with NFTs, and particularly with minting. We hear that so much, even when I'm out, you know, just like, you know, when I was out at NFT NYC, for example, or NFT LA, and I'm just talking to people, a lot of them are like, yeah, I started on Rarible. I started minting on Rarible. You know, I don't know why I haven't been on Rarible, you know, in a little bit. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's cool. Come back. We have a lot to talk about. We have a lot of stuff going on, you know, and community marketplaces are just one of those things which are really exciting. And we are bullish on community marketplaces for a couple reasons. I think the first, just from a safety perspective, is when we build a community marketplace and we have that custom domain, like we had with Pixel Vault, that's sort of attached to their domain, people can know that they are purchasing the real deal, that this is not something that is a fake collection. It's not a, a duplicate. It's not something that they can, you know, connect their wallets to and then, you know, have to worry about security. These are all the real deals. And with Pixel Vault in particular, another great thing that we were able to do is that they have several different IP underneath the Pixel Vault umbrella. So they have the comics for the punks, they have comics for apes, they have all these different things. And if you're looking just on Rarible.com or on any other marketplaces, you have to find those collections individually. And so what we heard from the community was that they were, you know, using several different tabs to filter through different collections to find what they wanted to buy. Well, that that marketplace, the one for Pixel Vault in particular, it combines all of them, and it's a really easy user experience. So that's another really great way, is if collections have multiple different sub collections, people can shop, they can buy, they can look through them without really having to do this whole, goose chase, which is really cool. I think another thing that we really love about the community marketplaces is just that you can set certain fees. This is not related to creator royalties. That's you know, sort of different, but you can add additional layers of fees that will then benefit the community treasury or the DAO wallet, et cetera. So we're really excited that there's all of this functionality around community marketplaces. I could probably go on for longer, but I want to make sure that, you know, we get a chance to talk more, but community marketplaces are lit.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, another one of the big ones that I see on there is the MFers, and you had this little coffee, little promo. Yeah. You want to tell me about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. The MFers are dope. I don't think people realize how much the Rarible team loves MFers. A lot of people on the team own MFers. I remember I got mine When I was at NFTLA, I was at breakfast with my boss. So this was back in maybe March, April, sometime there. I was with my boss at breakfast, and we were like, "Let's get MFers. Like, these are so cool." So we got them, and then one of our co-founders has the MFers as well. So we've always been just a big fan of that IP and sort of what it stands for. And so we built them a community marketplace. We actually. I was in a DM group with Satoshi, the original founder and creator, and he, well, I should say they, because I don't know who it is, but they were like, "Hey, can we hurry this up? Because we have some big news coming up next week." And we were like, "Okay." So we got everything squared away, and then the big news was they were retiring from Twitter. And so then we built this marketplace. They retired, but we were like, "It's okay. It's all good." And then since then, we have really been looking for ways to deepen our relationship with communities. I think, you know, this concept of community is so pervasive throughout Web3. Everyone says it, and very few brands or collections actually do things with that word. And one thing that we're trying to do, you know, as a we look, we see ourselves as a community-centric marketplace. And one of the things that we can do is reinvest back into communities, and particularly with collections. So we built that community marketplace for them. And also then we were like, "Huh, what else can we do?" It's CC0, you know, CC0 summer was trending, you know, a couple months ago. And we were like, "Let's do a physical activation." So then I was like, "Okay, I need to just start doing some social listening, some research." And I actually came across a tweet by an MFer. His name is Marto. And he tweeted, "GM MFers would make a dope coffee brand," or like something like that. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but it said that. And I bookmarked that tweet. I was like, "You know what? I'm going to come back to this." And then, you know, after all of our listening, that was the idea that, you know, we decided to rally behind, that it was someone from the community who had the idea. It was CC0. And we really thought that we could, you know, make this into something bigger that would eventually benefit the community. So we worked with a local roastery out of Michigan, a small business that we wanted to support. They supplied all of the coffee. We were able to sell some bags, which is great. And this is the first time that we're actually announcing this. So this is the first piece of alpha that we're getting
Nice.
on your show, is that 100% of the profits will actually be going back to the MFers. We had originally said 25%, and then we were like, "You know what? That's not good enough. Let's do 100%." So
Right on.
we will
Okay.
be making that donation most likely next week, right into the MFers treasury, so that they are able to continue building around that really awesome IP.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny. I think back to 2020 and I think, you know, Rarible kind of stood out to me as being kind of the rebellious platform. You know, it was at a time that there were artists getting kicked off of other platforms and they were, you know, doing the trash art was the big thing that I was into in 2020. And, you know, it kind of made Rarible stand out from some of those other, you know, let's call them establishment platforms. And, you know, what's Rarible doing now to kind of stand out from the crowd? I'm curious.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny that you mentioned the trash artist. You mentioned Rob Ness earlier. That
Yes.
was definitely a movement. That was a wave that sort of took, I think, the NFT world by storm, because it was so different than like the PFP collections, or, you know, and even those were sort of still early on in the day. It was really about like sort of digital art and digital fine art at that time. And then we sort of had this wave of PFPs. So we've had to sort of transition our business and our brand to being sort of the home of the fine artists, the rebellious fine artists. And now we are, you know, looking to also support, you know, the PFP collections, just given that the industry as a whole has adopted that as sort of like the thing right
Yes.
now. And so that's where some of these community marketplaces come from. And so we're really excited about that. The other thing I would say that we are really bullish on is the Rarible protocol. That's the underlying protocol that allows others to build on top of the technology that we have. So all of these community marketplaces are actually built on top of the Rarible protocol. They're sort of an extension of Rarible.com, but they're built on top of the protocol. And we're going to be making some announcements before the end of the year about some, you know, upgrades and some expansions to the protocol as well. So definitely stay tuned to, you know, the Rarible Twitter handle and you know, just the Rarible news, because we have some exciting stuff that I can't drop just yet, but
Okay.
definitely before the end of the year.
So when it comes to ETH, you're pretty much still steadfastly in the 721 token protocol, as far as I know. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I at the protocol level, this is going to be my most informed answer for you, just given that I'm more on the community side than the tech side.
Right, fair
I
enough.
try to stay up, you know, as much as I can. But going back to the Pixel Vault community marketplace, so Pixel Vault has both 721 and 1155s, and so
Okay.
we were actually able to enable 1155 in the Pixel Vault community marketplace. So that makes me believe that it's also functional at the protocol layer as well, so that anyone who wants to build on top of that protocol could hypothetically do 1155s. But I would say most of what we do is, yeah, the 721s.
Right. So I'm thinking about the community marketplaces. I was reading that basically when it comes to fees, like that's the fees are like there's 0% fees when you're buying and selling within that marketplace. Can you explain how is that working for Rarible? Like obviously there is the fee that the community can set for the benefit of the community, but then like what's the benefit to Rarible if you're having all this trading happening and no fees being gathered?
Yeah, so definitely 0% fees. The community can set, you know, sort of a fee, an additional fee on top of that to go back to the treasury. And then also, we're respecting the creator royalties right now. So, you know,
Right.
whatever that looks like will automatically be implemented. I think our strategy right now, and the reason why these zero fees exist, is so that we can sort of bring people back to Rarible and reintroduce them to the brand. Because as you know, even how we opened up, a lot of people are like, hey, you know, I minted my first NFT on Rarible, which actually, funny enough, I did as well. This was long before I worked at Rarible. I was still at Twitter at the time, and I was like, wow, NFTs are a thing. I'm gonna go try minting my first NFT after I knew even what that was. And I did it
Right.
on Rarible. And then, you know, a lot and then other platforms have just grown bigger, have become sort of the home and sort of the defunct behavior. Defunct is the wrong word. What I mean to say is it's become the natural sort of
Default, default.
default. There we go. That's what I meant, not defunct. I'm so sorry. Default behavior where, you know, your fingers might type in like OpenSea, or your fingers might type in something else, and you don't think twice about it. So what we're trying to do with these 0% fees is just bring people back to Rarible and say, hey, you know, you can actually buy and sell for less here, where it's going to be less ETH, you know, out of your pocket when you have to sell something, and just come back to Rarible, see what we have, see what we offer, because there's a lot of new stuff that we've been building this year that, again, we're going to announce before the end of the year. That's really going to make people think differently about what Rarible is and what Rarible can do. And so these 0% fees are just a way to like reintroduce ourselves to the world.
Okay, interesting. Because I know for myself as a creator, you know, Rarible was like a place where it was just there was such a buzz around it when I was new to it, you know. But then when you end up on, let's say, a curated platform, you know, then there's that incentive to mint there. So, you know, what do you do to keep creators coming back if they are on, say, a place like, say, Known Origin or Super Rare or those kinds of things?
Yeah, we have a couple of creators that we have close relationships with who activate, you know, all over all of the marketplaces. And I personally am super supportive of that. You know, when it comes to people who are artists full time, I would never look an artist in the face and say, you can only be on Rarible or else we're never going to work with you. Like, that's
Right.
silly. You know, this artist needs to pay their bills. They need to make money. They need to, you know, express themselves creatively. And there are also technical limitations. Like, there was a time when Rarible hadn't integrated Tezos yet. You know, we didn't come out of the gate
Right.
with that. And so, you know, if we haven't integrated a certain blockchain, you know, I couldn't hold an artist accountable who wants to be on that chain and it's not on Rarible. You know, I couldn't do that. So we do have a number of artists who are all over, and I personally love that. I do try to get them to like come back occasionally and say like, hey, okay, we did a couple drops. One of those who I've worked with recently, his name is Shaka Blood, and he has this series of robotic bunnies. They're called hoppers, and you know, every couple months or so he drops a series of one of ones, and he has dropped on Rarible before. But I remember it was probably one of my first couple weeks, and he tweeted, you know, I was in the Rarible Twitter account. I was scrolling, 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 and he tweeted dropping a new, you know, collection, but I can't decide where to drop it. And so immediately I slid into the DMs and was like, hey, drop it on Rarible. Let's talk more about what we can do. And so, you know, we got on a call and I was able to sort of share what the marketing support would be for that collect, for, you know, that drop. And he was like, okay, dope. Like, no other marketplaces reached out. No other, places offered me marketing support. Like, hell yeah, I'm going to go with Rarible. And he was able to drop, I think it was like maybe nine pieces, maybe 10. And he was able to take home like 9 or 10 ETH just from that in the middle of a bear market, because this happened like last month.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean, so for like a smaller creator to be able to just like take that home based on the support that we were able to, give him, that was really special for me. And then people saw that, and then other people within his ecosystem, one of them named Mark the Habibi, who has a collection called Habibis, he did a very similar thing where he was creating a small one of one. There were like maybe three, maybe four, maybe five, and he decided to put two up for auction, and he was able to walk away with some ETH as well. So I'm trying to revive this sort of sense that like Rarible will support artists, and we will put your work on the homepage, we'll tweet about it, we'll have spaces about it, and then also say, we also want to work with, generative collections, PFP collections, because the NFT space is so supportive of not just one type of NFT anymore. There's music NFTs, there's the fine art one of ones, there's the, 10,000s, there's the derivatives even. And so, we as a brand, I think, really want to develop a community, but not necessarily be pushing anyone out or exclusive. We're like the opposite. We're inclusive. We're saying like, hey, everybody, come hang out with us. Let's build a family here where everyone, can thrive, particularly artists.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because when I think of Rarible, I think of independent creators. That's just where my mind goes because that's just what it stands for in my mind. So when you talk about supporting independent creators, like, can you explain that a little bit? What do you mean by supporting them?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I think that's a branding challenge that we have right now, because that was everybody's first interaction with Rarible, going back to this trash art movement, going back
Right.
to the fine art, the one of ones. That's really how Rarible put its name on the map. I think from a like business perspective, it's really hard to keep a business going when it's just these, fine art one of ones, when competitors are making 2.5% on these 10K collections, which are being bought and sold like you wouldn't believe. So, we've made that transition, not leaving artists behind, but definitely looking to partner with other collections as well as we seek to establish, a revenue model that makes sense, particularly in a bear market. But particularly when it comes to supporting artists, what I mean by that is more of like the marketing support. Like for me, I really own the keys to the Twitter, to the Instagram, to the TikTok, to the Discord. And so for one of the artists that I mentioned recently, Shaka Blood, we were able to send out like maybe like 5 to 10 tweets from the Rarible account, which, we have 500,000 followers, so it's not nothing. We were able to do
It
that. We
helps,
had a
yeah.
space. Yeah, we had a space with him where we sort of interviewed him. We have some of the artists that he collaborated with on that one of one or the one of ones. We, posted in our Discord. And so there's this, we had them on the homepage of rarible.com. So there's this support that is getting their work in front of people who might not normally see it. Now, I can never guarantee an artist saying, hey, if we put you on the homepage, you're going to sell out. I can never guarantee that. But I think putting them on the homepage at least gets the eyeballs or the tweets or the space or whatever it is. It gets the eyeballs. It introduces people to their work who, might want to collect it. So for me, and sort of what I look after from a business perspective, the marketing support is how we're doing that right now.
Hey, in cooperation with the Coin Network, I am presenting Atomic Zombies by D. Klein. You can find these at atomiczombies.io. We've got 10,000 zombies that will eventually be available, each with their own set of random generative characteristics. You can watch your zombies' characteristics unlock, emerge, and evolve as they receive more attention online, powered by the Koi Network and proof of real traffic. Check it out at atomiczombies.io. It's interesting, you talk about these collections that get huge amount of money, or huge amounts of money, and then I think how the market has changed, and how in recent months it seems to me that a lot of people are buying stuff just because they like it, not necessarily for the purpose of flipping it, Have you seen that trend? I mean, you probably can kind of step back and see it on a larger scale. Like, what have you seen in terms of the buying and trading patterns in the
Yeah,
market?
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, after the bull run, which, when I joined the company, which was sort of, I want to say I joined in late March, early late March. That was sort of the end of the bull run. No one really knew that, but I joined, and then maybe a month or two later, we have Russia and Ukraine conflict, we have supply chains, we have food and energy crises around the world. So the pattern of trading has definitely shifted because liquidity has shifted. People are holding on to their fiat. They might not want to lock it up in an illiquid asset. And so, this concept of flipping, I do see it here and there. I see now more than I ever did people going to platforms, other platforms that may not be as supportive of creator royalties, let's say X2, Y2, because you're paying 0.5% on your sale instead of the 2.5% marketplace fee that you would pay on OpenSea or the 1% that you would pay on Rarible. So you actually more ETH stays in your wallet. So I've seen that behavior shift where, the smaller marketplaces are actually getting more traction because of maybe their complicated relationship with creator royalties. But it just in terms of collecting, I have seen that quite a bit. And also to take that point a little bit further, people are now exploring new chains as
Right.
Solana NFTs become a little bit more prolific. We just saw, Utes and the Ute list, and that was over everybody's timeline. And I think that's sitting around like maybe 130 SOL right now. People are looking at other chains. And then Tezos is one where I'm seeing a lot. I recently, last month, started collecting on Tezos. There's a lot of artists who are minting on Tezos, who are creating on Tezos. It's a fairly environmentally friendly chain. Gas is very inexpensive. It's almost like negligible, to mint or even, buy on Tezos. And you have an attractive price model where, you can find things that are super high end, that are super expensive, but you can also find really good quality art on the lower end as well. So yeah, I think people are sort of in this mindset of collecting just, for the sake of it. If something is like, a little bit less expensive. I'll say that the blue chips will never go out of business, so to speak. I would say that their volume is down significantly. The floors are down significantly, but I think there's that level of resistance that they're likely not going to go under, just for the sake that they're blue chips.
It's interesting when you mention the multi-chain approach that Rarible has taken. When it comes to the minting process, is it, I haven't even looked because I've always minted on ETH on Rarible. Is it possible to mint, using Tezos on Rarible or Solana on
Yeah.
Rarible? I've never tried that.
Tezos is a definite yes. I unfortunately should have looked this up before the interview, but I'm not,
It's
I would
okay, you
have to get
can't know
back to you
everything. You can't
on,
know
I
everything,
know,
Adam.
sorry. I want to. It's like my mission to get on here and be like, I can answer every one of his questions and sound smart. But Ethereum for sure, Tezos for sure, Flow, Solana, Polygon, and Immutable X. It's another bit of alpha. It hasn't been announced yet, but it's on the Rarible website. If you go, there's a
Yeah, I
it's
saw
like
it.
has its own change.
Yes,
So we're
little red
announcing that
dot
next
next to
week.
it.
So like a new
Yeah.
integration. Yeah, those I would
Okay.
have to double check on. I don't think so, but ETH and Tezos for sure.
Okay, interesting. So you would just connect your, Kukai wallet or whatever to
Yeah.
Rarible and mint away. See, that's interesting because I've always, when I've minted on Tezos, I always found the experience pretty clunky because I was back in the Hikett Nunk days. I was trying out Tezos back. The reason I went there was because ETH fees were so ridiculously high. And so everybody was just flocking to Hen, it was called at the time,
Yeah.
to mint on Tezos. And then, of course, they had their problems. And since then, I kind of just lost interest because I just found it to be a little bit more of a clunky experience. Whereas Rarible, the one thing I always liked about it was a smooth experience, right?
Yeah, it's always been a smooth experience. Like I said, I minted my first ETH NFT on Rarible. It's this like skate, it's this like 8-bit skateboard. Like, when I got into the space, when like CryptoPunks were popping off, I was like, okay, this sort of 8-bit pixelated art like is the thing. And then it went into this sort of like illustrated animated style, and then it sort of went into like 3D modeling. I don't know where it's going to go next. It's likely going to be sort of like metaverse, like 3D metaverse type stuff, but that's like the progression, at least of PFPs that I saw. And with Tezos, you just sort of connect your, I think I have a Temple wallet, but I think I've heard of
Okay,
Gemini
yeah,
as
same idea.
well.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you just go from there. I don't know if you can lazy mint on Tezos. But then again, I don't know why you would need
I don't
to
know if
because
you'd
the
need
fees are
to.
like
Yeah.
insanely low.
Yeah,
Yeah.
like
I
10 cents or
remember
whatever.
though. Yeah, I remember this was back in maybe like November, December. ETH was at its almost all-time high. I remember paying gas like $100 just to validate a transaction, make a purchase, whatever it was, and being like, okay, yeah, this is bad. Then I remember I was trying to unwrap some wrapped Ethereum the other day because I wanted to buy something, and I just, for whatever reason, had wrapped Ethereum. Gas was like $6, and I was like, no, I'm gonna wait till
Too
the
much.
network calms down. Too much. I know. So,
Had a
man,
transaction the other
it's.
day where I sent someone one and it couldn't even register what it was in dollar value because it was less than a cent.
There you go. We love to see that.
So,
We're
I
very
mean, I
much
guess it's the
looking
benefit of the
forward.
bear market.
Yeah, we're looking forward to sharding, which hopefully will bring the gas costs down.
Yeah, how far away do you figure that is? I feel like it's a good year away at least.
Oh, I think more. I'm not a
You think more,
technical
huh?
guy, but I would say that like there's probably going to be, even if the merge is successful, which I hope it is, probably some like network maintenance, and then just even
Yes.
scoping whatever the next phase of this is, which I know there's that fancy infographic that Vitalik has shared, but I just, from the technical side, actually scoping out how to implement some of these upgrades is going to take, that in and of itself is going to take a while. So I think based on just the merge timeline, which was several years, yeah, I think we're looking at several years for those next upgrades as
Several
well.
years, several you're saying. Several usually
Maybe
means like
two,
more than three or
maybe
four,
two.
Adam.
I wish I knew more about the
A
technical
long
side of this.
time.
I try to stay up on it, and then they start using all these technical terms. I'm like, nope, we're closing out this white paper and I'm going to bed. We're
That's
closing
where
it up and I'm
Immutable
going to
X
bed.
and Tezos and Polygon and all those things, maybe they have some longevity to them then, right? Because that's the thing I wonder sometimes, like, if ETH does get to the point where it's super low fees and it's super fast, and et cetera, like, what happens to these other, blockchains? Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I don't know. Scaling is definitely not my specialty, but I know that with Immutable X, like with our partnership, like I, of course, went on, the Immutable X website. I was doing some research, I was doing some reading. You can mint there for free. And I'm like, if it's on ETH, how does that make sense? I don't know, but I'm sure there's
Well, they're
a
probably
technician out
subsidizing it,
there.
right? They're covering the cost of
Oh,
it.
maybe they have to. Yeah. I'm sure there's someone who can tell me that's
The cost
probably
is
it,
probably
though.
so negligible they make the money back in the fees, right?
Oh yeah, that's probably
Is
true.
my guess.
They have a lot of gaming projects, which I think at the scale that they're operating at, which is just like people buying different pieces of games or different utilities within games, you're right. They probably make all that back.
So talking gaming, because that seems to be what everybody says is going to be the next big thing, What do you think? Is that the trend? What's going to happen there in gaming?
Yeah,
I
game.
find that our understanding of what NFTs are in games is very limited as of now in terms of what people imagine it to be. It's kind of like, you're going to be in like a Counter-Strike type game, CS:GO or whatever, and you're going to like buy a gun and use it and sell it. It's like, okay, but there's got to be more to it than that, I feel like.
Yeah, there's interesting applications popping up around gaming. I think you're right. Like the closest connection for me in terms of technology that already exists is something like Fortnite. There's
Right.
game, or excuse me, there's skins, there's weapons, there's upgrades, there's physical, things that you're able to get within those games. What I think is interesting though about that model is that, with my understanding of Fortnite, once you buy a skin, you're not able to resell it. So you're essentially like renting it into perpetuity. You don't actually really own it in a way that would allow you to resell it. Whereas with an NFT that has a similar utility, you can equip it to your character, but you could actually sell it again on the open market. So I think just that alone is going to be wildly different, where you can get an upgrade, you can get a weapon, you can get a skin, you can get whatever. And then you can sell it when you're done with it and use that money to buy something else. I think that's really cool. Another thing I think we're going to see as metaverses become more mature and as they expand, I think we're going to see NFTs go beyond just like plots. It's you're not going to have like a sandbox plot. You're not just going to have, an other side plot. I think there's going to be buildings that are eventually minted as NFTs. I think there's going to be experiences that will have NFT components to them that you're going to need to have in your wallet. So for example, like you need to have a certain weapon and be a certain race of character and be in a certain city or in building to qualify for some sort of quest.
And that could
And
be a
the way,
completion of the quest is acquiring those
or
things, right?
that too, exactly. So these
Right.
like token gated, it's almost like a token gated experience where this metaverse is constantly scanning your wallet to see what combination of items you have that would allow you to then go into different sort of storylines or paths. I think that's going to be super cool. The biggest challenge that at least I see from my perspective, and again, I'm not on the technical side, but just with gas, and that's I think why you have these scaling solutions with gas, and if the game is completely on chain, what qual is going to qualify as a transaction, what is not, and how are people going to afford that? That to me is
Sure.
sort of the biggest barrier right now. But I would imagine that there's smart people working on this and solving this. So I'm sure we'll find a happy medium.
Funny, I was reading an article the other day, and it was from a website that absolutely hates NFTs. And it was saying how terrible it was that someone had this idea that you could have people playing NPCs in games and getting paid for it, and saying how terrible that was and exploitative it was. But I think, you know what? Like, if I got to go play a character in a game and earn some tokens and play that role and say I played it well and got rewarded for that, how is that a bad thing? Like, yeah, I thought that was such an interesting concept because if you think of so many games, like, I don't know, a game, say like Elder Scrolls or something, imagine that you could be that one guy in town that needs help with the quests and, you're asking for help and you play the part really well. And, I don't think that's a bad thing. What do you think?
No, absolutely not. It's just sort of like a digital evolution of like LARPing, or it's a
Yeah,
digital evolution
totally.
of like cosplay or something else, where like maybe you don't want to be like an adventurer in this like MMO or RPG or whatever it happens to be. But you want to become an NPC. I think by definition, there's going
Well,
to
it's
have to be
not
a
an
different name
NPC,
for it,
obviously, but
right? Yeah.
that was the gist of it.
Yeah.
I remember like there was an old game, an MMO. My favorite one actually was Star Wars Galaxies. I don't know if you ever played that game. But
I
there were
don't think I
people
did.
when in the original game before they did all kinds of updates to it that basically ruined the game. In the original game, there were people who literally just ran businesses in the game. They had shops people would go to, and that was their role in the game, and they enjoyed it. And that was something that they had fun with. Now, they weren't earning any real earnings from it. They were just becoming wealthy in the game. But I just think, imagine an entire world where there are no NPCs, where all the players are people, but they're fulfilling the story roles. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah,
to me,
yeah.
that's only possible with this kind of technology, because there otherwise would be not a whole lot of incentive to do that. I mean, there'd be some incentive for the really hardcore players, but for the majority, there wouldn't be, right?
Yeah, I think a couple things come to mind there. One, I'm seeing this. I think everyone sees the holy grail of the metaverse being sort of like a Ready Player One type of situation,
Right.
where all of these different characters, all of these different worlds, all of these different IPs sort of collide together in this like mega battle or mega adventure, or sort of whatever you want it to be. I think what we're going to see is that is very far off, I think, if we ever see
Yes,
it,
it's a
for a
ways off
couple
for
different
sure.
reasons. But another thing that came to mind was, have you ever seen Free Guy? I think it was the Okay, it's the movie with, is it Ryan Reynolds? Is that his name? It's one of the Ryans, and he essentially is an NPC. And something
Okay.
happens to him where he sort of gets like free will, and he starts to figure out that he's an NPC. He sort of has this identity crisis, and then
Of
he
like
sort of
Westworld type
becomes,
thing.
yeah, exactly. He sort of becomes an adventurer and gets his own storyline. And then at the end, sort of like, saves the day. Sorry for the spoiler. But I think
What?
that's,
No, I can't. I'm
Yeah,
going to bother
exactly.
watching it now,
Imagine.
Adam.
Imagine. No, I think that that leads me to this other point, saying that, I think people role-playing NPCs could be cool, but I think given this the level of advancement that we're on, particularly with the AI and where that's going to go, I think there will always be NPCs who can do more interesting and more dynamic things. So sure, you could have someone, be the let's say it's like the beggar in the street because they have fun with that. That's a bad example. But they could be, begging people for coins as they walk by, or you could have them like allow them to do that. But I think NPCs will evolve as AI becomes more powerful to do more interesting and dynamic things. So I don't think they're going away, but I do like that idea that someone could just like sort of tap an NPC on the shoulder, sort of in the background, and say, "Hey, I'm going to swap in with you for like, I don't know, 5, 10 minutes, an hour, and just like see what it's like."
No, it's interesting when you mentioned the AI and AI art, and I mean, what is your experience with that phenomenon? There was that contest a little while ago. I forget where it was, where some AI art won against like
Oh,
traditional
really?
artists, and people
Yeah.
were outraged. Of course, the artists were outraged, but it's like, well, it won according to the parameters of the contest.
Yeah,
So.
this is a very polarizing topic, and I have to preface by saying I am not an artist. I've never sold work. I don't even create artwork. So I'm coming with a sort of like collector's mind frame, if you will. I think, the advent of this Wall-E character, have you seen? I think it's called Wall-E, right? Who does the AI on like the text prompts that then creates. Have you seen this?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure it's called Wall-E. Maybe it's called Wall-E too. I can send it to you afterward. It's essentially this AI artist where you type in a text prompt and it creates art for you based on that
Oh, well,
text
there's
prompt.
Dolly too. Is that what you're
Oh,
referring to?
you know what? I'm thinking of the
Like
Disney.
Salvador Dali?
I'm thinking of Wall-E, the Disney character.
Okay,
It's
yes, you were.
Dolly. You're
No, it
so
is kind of
right.
a dystopian thing,
Oh my gosh, Dolly. I'm
I
like,
can,
what? It's
yeah.
Wall-E. No, that's a little robot from the future. I'm
Yes,
so
I was like,
sorry.
I haven't heard of that one, but
Nope, not that one. Okay, so Dolly, you're so right. So I think what's interesting there is this sort of metaphysical question of who is the artist at that point? Is it the person who created the text prompt? Because without that text prompt, that art would no longer would not exist. Is it the AI in whatever this AI is? Or is it the engineer who actually wrote the code who allowed this to happen? I think in a way it's all of them. But I do think it's going to squeeze these artists a little bit to think about like their place in the world. And that's not a new concept really either. Like machines have replaced supply chain, like physical humans have been doing that for a while. Is that quote unquote right? I'm not an ethicist, but I do think it is going to sort of squeeze the creative industry because, as a person who, runs a team, I'm always looking at budget efficiencies. If
Of
I can
course.
hire Dolly to create artwork that is winning contests, that now becomes a viable option for me to then use that budget for that reason and other budget for other reasons. So I think in a very technical sense, it's going to squeeze artists. There's a really interesting project actually that just launched AI art. Are you familiar with the Fluff ecosystem by any chance?
No, that's a new
Okay,
one to
you
me.
need to yeah, you need to look them up. It's underneath a company called Altered State Machine, and they are developing AI technology with a like infinite number of uses, which is really cool. They just launched a collection. Well, the collection's been out for a little while. It's called Thingies. There's these little spiders. And in the background of these spider NFTs, there's an easel with like paintbrushes. And just earlier this week, it was announced that these spiders are called Thingies. They actually have an AI brain inside of them that's connected to the NFT that allows them to create AI art. And so this entire week, it's been taking over my timeline. I have a couple different NFTs from this ecosystem. Of people creating all of this, well, their thingy is sort of creating this AI art, which is really cool. I've also seen a lot of generative art, which I think is another interesting sort of application and in the realm of what we're talking about, because I think the artist sort of sets the parameters and sets the inputs, and then the code or the machine or the program sort of creates the art from there. So, you know, I'm not sure if I have an opinion on it quite yet. I do think it's cool. I think progress and sort of investigation and trying new things is a win for the space. You know, artists might, you know, leave this behind and say, hey, you know, we tried it. Wasn't for us. But I do think it's cool. I think it's a new application and blending of technologies, and you will have to see what the market thinks.
I find it interesting how each of the AIs, like DALL-E is one of them, Midjourney's another. I find it interesting how they have their own styles. Like you can kind of discern them from each other to an extent. You know, so there's still some human input there, obviously on the coding side, you know, and on the way that the data is gathered, you know, for the purpose of. I've even had a few where I was testing out Midjourney and creating portraits, like just for sources kind of idea. And like for inspiration. And I had somewhere it would show like watermarks on it because
Oh,
the
no
AI
way.
had found an image somewhere that was watermarked and it's gone, oh, okay, this fits his description and use that, right? So, you know, it's interesting to see how these AIs work and sometimes you can catch kind of their unique flaws or styles. But, you know, I think it's a collaborative thing, right? It's collaboration, like you said, it's collaboration between whoever's prompting it. And the people who engineered it, right? So, and the program itself, you know, so because without the person putting in the prompts, you don't get anything, like you said, right? And so, if a person's particularly clever with their prompts, they can get some really cool stuff, right?
Yeah,
So,
I
there's still a
agree.
creative element to it, right? I guess where I'm
Absolutely.
troubled by it is the deceptive element of it, where someone goes, oh, check out my paintings, and it doesn't, it's not actually like they actually painted anything, right? They just, use the text prompts, you know, so there is that deceptive side of it that's
Are you
problematic.
saying like someone could potentially sell AI generated artwork that they didn't create and like sort of take credit for it and like even, you know, maybe even build a career on artwork that, you know, they didn't. I mean, that then though gets into
Right?
this more abstract question of like, is the final product a result of your tools? So like Photoshop is a tool. Artists are in Photoshop.
Sure.
AI, if you've written, you know, a program, that's also a tool. So
I
I don't
guess that's the
know.
deceptive part of it. If you went from the beginning and said, yeah, my medium is AI, so therefore I do this, I don't have a problem with that, right? It's a person who's, you know, making something that's meant to look, say, painterly, for example, you know, and they're like, oh, yeah, I used Procreate and painted this, right? And it's like, no, you didn't. You know what I mean? Like, that's where it gets a little bit foggy to me. So.
I think that'll always be sort of, you're right. I think there is an ethics question there. I also have to think back to like Art Basel with a banana with duct tape on a
Yeah.
canvas. You know, it's like, I don't know a lot about that piece. I don't know anything about that artist, but I'm sort of like, okay. The question of art and who made it and what it's worth, it's always going to be subjective to some degree.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Hey, maybe we can wrap up with talking about a couple of the, you know, implementations or tools on Rarible. One of them I noticed was kind of handy. You announced it back in August was the Rarity Sniper, which is a pretty cool tool where you can actually look up the rarity of works on the site.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, rarity has always been an interesting part of the conversation around NFTs. Certain people care about it immensely. They care about having either the most rare or the top, you know, 10%, 25%. Other people don't care about it at all. What I think, you know, the example that I always give is, you know, at the height of the Bored Apes, you know, it was like 150 ETH was the floor at the time. The ugliest Bored Ape was still worth 150 ETH. So
Right.
whether it was 9,999 in terms of rarity, or whether it was number one, which you
Like
know would have been
Justin
worth way
Bieber's, you
more,
know, boring, like plain, really boring ape.
And then I think there's also like several like gold metallic apes that you know go for like you know way more than that. But you know I think it really depends on what you're looking for in that journey. If you're more of a collector who wants the rare pieces, being able to see the rarity as you're shopping, as you're browsing, as you're bidding can be really convenient because what I've had to do and sometimes still have to do when I'm looking at NFTs on different sites because you know sometimes they're listed one place and not the other place, so you can't buy it, you know, everywhere. You might have to have like Rarity Sniper or Icy Tools or like another tool open in separate tabs, and you're switching back and forth constantly. It's not a great user experience. So I think this is just one way in which we're trying to make NFTs more accessible and easier for people to use and make decisions on whether or not they actually want it.
Yeah, no, I can see it being a useful tool. Any other bits of news or cool tools you want to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
One of the things we haven't touched on is things like the Pixel Vault Marketplace, like the MFers Marketplace. Those are what we sort of call internally sort of white glove, where our developers actually build them. There's a separate function where anyone who owns a collection can go to Rarible, they can connect their wallet that has the contract, and they can actually claim a marketplace. So anyone who owns an NFT collection, it doesn't have to be a 10,000 collection, it doesn't have to be really, any of the things that we think about when we think about collection, but anyone can go claim their marketplace. When you're on the sort of the profile page of the collection itself, there's a black button that says claim your marketplace, and that allows you to set up a community marketplace for your specific collection, which you can then do pretty much all the other things we were saying. You can have the domain, you can set the custom fees, you can do this and that. So really exciting to give people like slightly more ownership and slightly more branded experience when they're sending their audience, because you can change colors, you can change fonts, you can change layouts. So it's a really nice tool that we just talked about Rarity Tools. We did mention Immutable X, which we're going to be announcing in 2 days on Monday, but is live now. So if anyone's interested on, just sort of checking out the projects there, which are mostly gaming projects. I've seen a lot of NFTs that almost look like trading cards or playing cards from something like a Pokemon or a Yu-Gi-Oh. A lot of those are on Immutable X. So we have some interesting things that have dropped. And then, as I mentioned, we have a couple things coming out probably within the next like month, month and a half that I think are going to really change the way people look at Rarible. So nothing I can share further, but that is like a pretty juicy tip that things are coming that are going to be pretty exciting.
Awesome. Well, hey, it was really fun to talk with you, Adam, and fun to reminisce about the old days of Rarible and how far Rarible has come. So thank you for
Absolutely.
taking the time.
Absolutely. Dee, thank you for having me. And once we drop those features, please have me back so that we can talk about them because there's some really, really cool stuff coming out.
Right on. Sounds great. Okay, have an awesome day.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dee. Talk to you later.
Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.